Am Anfang stand der Knochen im Mittelpunkt. Aus Os, dem Knochen, und Pathos, dem Leid, formte Aethystil im 19. Jahrhundert das Wort Osteopathie. Heute, circa 150 Jahre später, ist die Osteopathie in aller Munde. Das, was sie verkörpert, entwickelt sich aber stetig weiter. In diesem Podcast sitzt du an einem Tisch mit zwei Vollblut-Therapeuten, die dich mitnehmen in ihre Welt der Osteopathie. Vom Nerd Talk bis zur Anekdote. Mal mit Hand und Fuß, mal Pi mal Daumen, aber immer mit Herz. Du bist auf Osteopathie-Visite mit Klaus und Dennis. Und dieser Podcast heißt Knochenjob.
Good day and welcome everybody to the Knochenjob podcast. Today a special episode in English. My guest today is René Zwedijk. Welcome on board, René.
Thank you, Klaas. From the Netherlands, but actually now in Spain. That's why the light is maybe a little bit different.
Yeah, I'm a little bit jealous, I have to say. But today the weather in northern Germany is quite excellent as well.
Okay, good. So, enjoy it.
Yeah, you are kind of semi-retired as...
Yes, since I had some health problems a few years ago, and then I decided to see less clients. Mm-hmm. And now actually I'm six weeks in the Netherlands and I work. I see clients 2-3 days a week. And next to that, I'm lecturing and organizing and so on. And also preparing my lectures, try to write a little bit. And then I go to Spain here to relax for 2-3 weeks. And also then I have the time to go into the deep in our wonderful profession. So I'm happy to be in this situation.
Yeah, sounds good. I think you have earned your way of living right now, because you have been an osteopath for about 37 years already.
Yeah. I graduated in 89. I was previous. I did physiotherapy, and actually already during my physiotherapy, I was fascinated by. You know, I met a colleague and he told me about a training and osteopathy. I never heard about it. And it was fascinating because one of the exams was that the people were blinded and they got a vertebra in their hand and they had to tell which vertebra in the spine it was. And I said, wow. Mm-hmm. This is fantastic. That's what I want to do. So actually already during my physiotherapy training, I was thinking, okay, I want to be an osteopath. And then actually directly after my physio, I started to do osteopathy. And in that time, it was really, there were a lot of schools and they were all fighting. And so I changed the different schools. And at the end, I graduated in 89. And then, I started my journey in the profession.
And you're did quite a lot of lecturing also in Germany. You're still doing it. I think your next course will be in Munich in October. And some more as well.
I have several things. I will go to IOS in May, in the beginning of June, where I do a lecture for the group of Renzo Molinari. Mm-hmm. I will be in Poland. I will be in, and also here in Spain, I lecture. I lecture in the Netherlands. I lecture in Munich in Germany. Mm-hmm. It's October, November. I don't have it in my mind. So,
October. I just looked it up. Yeah.
And okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's the group of Peter Schwind and Münninger Gruppe. And we are friends for a long time. So I go there. Every year, once a year, mm-hmm. which is always a pleasure.
One of your big programs the last years is a conference that you yourself organize in the Netherlands. Close to the last years, it was close to Hertogenbosch. I was there 2 years ago. It was excellent. It was a nice experience. The topic from 2 years ago was the cranial sphere, osteopathy in the cranial sphere. And this year in September, you will take a deep dive into the viscera.
Yeah,
Yeah.
We try to organize a conference every 2 year, and we try to take different topics. So we had the fascia a few years ago. We one conference about the vagus nerve, which is actually something that I like a lot. Then we had the cranium, and now we're having the visceral topic, which is also fascinating. And I think it is necessary because when you look at the development of the profession in many countries, you see that the profession is advancing, and more it is accepted by governments and organizations. And there is more requests for good scientific base of osteopathy. And what you see is that in many countries, people concentrate on the musculoskeletal part, on the patellar part of the profession. And there are even some voices in some countries where they say, okay, that's the only thing that we do. And I think this is really, yeah, pity, because I think one of our strong the strongest points of our profession is that it is holistic. And holistic means that you look at the total body and not only to the musculoskeletal system. And so that's why I think it's very important to spend some more time also from a scientific view to the cranium, and this time to the viscera. So that's really what we are aiming for, to look for the scientific part of the visceral osteopathic techniques and theories.
And what is the fascinating thing about treating the viscera? For me, when I started becoming fascinated by osteopathy, it wasn't treating visceral disorders like belly pain or diarrhea or whatever. It was more about treating kind of musculoskeletal disorders through the viscera. You know, back pain, curing back pain by treating the bowels or treating the kidney or something like that. What do you think fascinates most osteopaths, or what fascinates you about visceral osteopathy?
For me, it started at the same in the same way, because I was writing my thesis as a physiotherapist about pseudoreticular syndromes and pain coming from a joint or a structure and giving irradiation in an arm or a leg. And then I came over the possibility that also an organ like a heart can give pain in a jaw or in arm. So I was also fascinated by this. And so it started for me a little bit like in the same way, that viscera can cause problems in the musculoskeletal system, in the cranial system, and so on. But when you look further, you often see that like complaints. Let's take a hip arthrosis. And when you look at hip arthrosis, in which group you see the hip arthrosis, and you look at what other pathologies also are very often present in these in found in these groups, you see that there are often visceral problems too. And so by this we see that by treating the viscera, you influence the musculoskeletal system, but you also influence the functioning of that different organ. So more and more, I was not only looking at the musculoskeletal part of the visceral treatment, but also the visceral part. And I think it's fascinating to work on that. And more, there is more evidence that we as osteopaths can work in this area and have very good results. So,
Okay, excellent. And if I take a look at the program of your conference in September in the Netherlands, there's one person, or there are a lot of interesting speakers there, but one person who cares a lot about the history of osteopathy, who is Jason Haxton. He's the director, the curator of the A.T. Steele Museum in Kirksville still. I've heard quite some lectures from him. He will lecture about the history of osteopathy, or what Steele did to the viscera. If I'm correct, it is written to Jean-Pierre Barral, who was kind of not the inventor of Whistler osteopathy, but he did not start it, but he is quite famous for treating the viscera, but still did it as well. Can you give some insights into what he might be talking about and what Still did back then?
Yeah, when I was studying the origin of Israel osteopathy, also I was I was curious what Still did. And we have to be honest that when we look at the history, already half the 19th century, there was a Swedish doctor, Ture Brandt, who really did some visceral work. And even now, his techniques were in Germany, for example, used till the Second World War. So visceral osteopathy, although it was called osteopathy, was already used in other parts of the world. So, and we know from Still that Still was looking for a solution for health problems in general, and he was not only interested in treating back pain and head pain and a sore shoulder and so on. He was looking for the treatment for diseases, and he worked on the organs, on the viscera, but he did not use so many direct techniques on the viscera. So his thought was, by working on the spine, that he was liberating the nerves, and that the nerves then influenced the organs. He was very much fascinated by the lymphatics. He worked a lot on the lymphatics, although he did not call it the lymphatics so much, but on the circulation. We all know his arterial rule. And in general, so circulation, the improvement of circulation in visceral problems was a big goal from him. There is a story that he was walking in Kirksville, and a lady came with her child, and she was coming to Dr. Still and asked, can you help my child because it has dysenteria, hemorrhagic dysenteria, which in these times was lethal. And then he did some techniques on the abdomen, and next time when he opened his door of his practice, a lot of mothers with other children were sitting there because they all came with this children with this disease, because it helped in one child. And so probably what he did was working on the circulation, working on the lymphatics, working on the innervation by influencing and try to influence the organs. And then two of his students, McConnell and Barber, they developed, and it was about 100 years ago now, they developed the first osteopathic direct techniques on the viscera, and they published a lot about it. And you can still find the material, although it's not very, very easy to find it, but I found some material. So the McConnell and Barber techniques are still there.
Okay.
And then we see that in France, Jacques Weinschenk was one of the first people here in Europe who published in 1982, I think it was, a book about visceral treatment. Mm-hmm. So there was a little bit the start of visceral treatment in Europe, and then Jean-Pierre Barral came, and of course he was in modern times, let's call it modern times, he's a very important person in the development of visceral osteopathy. Mm-hmm. But we all have other people too, like Fina and William. They have very excellent, did some excellent work also with ultrasound sonography, I have to say. So there are a lot of people who worked on this topic.
Okay, so now that we have heard quite something about the history of the visceral osteopathy, when I attended your conference 2 years ago, it was a lot of about new science and new juicy innovations in the science of osteopathy. What can we expect? What new signs or what new directions are gonna take off in visceral osteopathy?
Yeah, we always try to divide the conference is 2 days, two times a morning and two times an afternoon. In the mornings we have a plenary session, and in this plenary session I try to make a mixture of osteopathic scientists with scientists from outside osteopathy. Yeah. So what we see, we start with, of course, I think you start with embryology. So we start with Jaap van der Wal, who is an excellent lecturer.
Yeah.
And I think he's one of the key speakers in keynote speakers in every conference where he speaks. And then, of course, Frank Willard. Will come and he will talk about visceral integration and the relationships and then I have some people from outside. For example, I have contact with the Dutch adhesion research group.
Okay.
Who are surgeons, and they look for new possibilities to assess if there are adhesions in the abdomen. Mm-hmm. And so they developed techniques with MRI and with sonography to see if there are adhesions.
Okay.
And so they will talk about this in this conference and show some material that you can see if there are adhesions or in the abdomen and how to diagnose it.
Okay.
Then the next day we have some people from outside the profession, like a pediatric doctor who's very famous in the Netherlands in treating abdominal problems in children. And so she will talk about how she works on the visceral problem in pediatrics. We have a scientist coming from France, and it's fascinating because when I invited her, she was so surprised because she is a mechanobiologist.
Okay.
And she is researching the importance of mechanics on the reproductive organs in females. And what you see is that when the mechanics in the abdomen are disturbed, that this is influencing, for example, the ovulation and also the development of oocyte.
Okay.
So she will talk about this, and she was so fascinated, and she died really in our profession. and so I try to bring science together with the
Okay.
Another dentist will come and talk about how important the health in the mouth is, what you can do as an osteopath. And then in the afternoon, you know, I attended many conferences, I did many workshops, and I was always a little bit disappointed what you can learn in a workshop. So what I had in mind is I want to organize demonstrational workshop, because when you are an experienced osteopath, and you have a colleague who gives a lecture and shows how he or she is working, you can learn a lot about it by just looking at them. Mm-hmm. So, and for this, we have fantastic speakers like Nathalie Camira, Philippe van Kaye, Colette Peters, Matthias Beck with UltraShow, how to investigate. And we have somebody from Brazil who is a specialist in abdominal adhesion. So all kinds of things. Yeah.
Excellent. So how did you get all the people together? Did you know them already before?
Yeah, in many years I attended many conferences in all over the world, and I have with Panterai we have a large network. And so people know us, I know the people, and when you invite them, most of them are pleased to come. And so, and the second thing is, one of the things that I like a lot is studying. So when I have an idea of a conference, like the visceral conference, I start to think what is interesting, and then I'm starting to research and look for publications who did some interesting publications. And then when you find the publications and you contact the people, most of them are for the first thing is they are surprised because from osteopathy, and then you explain them a little bit how we work, and then they are really most of the time they are pleased and they are honored by the invitation.
It was also fascinating 2 years ago when there were quite a few scientists from other fields who had no clue about osteopathy, got treated by the other osteopathic lecturers, and they were really fascinating. They stayed there the whole conference. They attended the other lectures and got treated, and it was fascinating to see. So, So I think
It was.
you're doing quite a good job to get the several professions together.
I think class it's really important, because when I started as an osteopath, you worked in your practice and everybody knew that you did something which was very effective, but nobody knew exactly what it was. And now, 40 years later, the profession is much more accepted. People know the profession. They really respect the effects of the profession. But they also think it is vague. And why they think it is vague? Because we as osteopaths are not always able to explain exactly what we do. And I think the more you know as an osteopath, the more you are familiar with scientific basis of the profession, the easier you can explain what you do. And I think this is very helpful. It's helpful for your patients, because then you can use easy words, you can use their language. But when you contact you meet a doctor or a medical specialist or a scientist, and you have the knowledge and you can explain what you do, they understand from, oh, this is interesting. For example, the people from the Dutch research group, Richard Terbroek, he is a professor, Bas van der Goor and Richard Terbroek, they are really top scientists, and they're really fascinated by the osteopathic work. And I think the nice thing would be is that in the future there will be a cooperation, and I think it is possible. But for this we have to, as osteopaths, use the language of the scientists and the medical world. And when we use the wrong language, we are not accepted. So I think this conference is important for many people to teach them a little bit this, and also to lit the light in them and to say, okay, this is interesting. I have to dive into this. What's happened to me?
This, what you just said, that we have to use the same language at other medical professions, something that occurs to me a lot. And someone who said that as well is Jorge Esteves, who is also invited, if I'm correct. He's from Portugal, if I'm not.
He's from Portugal.
What will his topic be? Or what did you invite him for? Because he's well known in the field of academic osteopathy,
He's
he's
very,
published
very
a
well
lot.
known. He did a lot of work, and Jorge is talking the second day in the morning about interoception, and he did some publications about the interoceptive prediction, and how to use interoception for in the osteopathic treatment. So what, and I think interoception is really, really fascinating. I think it is something that is a long time not well understood in science, and but now I think it was is 20 years ago that Craig published a very important work about interoception, and the last 10 years it is also discovered by osteopaths, and one of the first persons that wrote about it is Jorge. And he will show us in this lecture the importance of interoception and how you use this in your physical approach and your osteopathic approach.
Okay. Excellent. And maybe if we can go into you talked about the Dutch specialist in gastrointestinal disorders in children, Judith Kocken, if I'm correct. The name of the topic is Healing Your Inner Child Heals the Soul and Makes Physical, Mental and Emotional Social Health Possible. Quite interesting as well. Can you say something more about that?
Yeah. What we see is that it was in 2002 when we had the new definition of the osteopathic profession. Once in a while, they find a need to redefine the profession, and they published five osteopathic conceptual models. And so the mechanics, the neurological approach, the respiratory, circulatory approach, the bioenergetical approach, and the biopsychosocial approach. And what we try in the conference is to use every conceptual model also in the visceral system. So, and Judith will in her treatment in her approach to visceral problems, abdominal problems in children. She looks at the child with a broad perspective. And one of the things that is very important is the biopsychosocial model. And she will show how important this is in also the treatment of abdominal problems like constipation, diarrhea, vomiting, and so on.
So 2 days, September the 18th and the 19th.
Yeah.
Lectures in the morning and practical workshops, demonstrations in the afternoon.
Yeah. So the demonstration or workshop, it is 3 hours, and in the first part, the teacher or the lecturer will give a demonstrate or a theoretical exposure of what he or she is wanting to tell, and then in the second part, there is a demonstration of how you can use it. Some of them will bring a patient, other one will do it on somebody who is present.
Yeah.
And I think the interesting thing is that you can take a look of how somebody approaches a certain problem. And I think this is very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Rene, thank you very much. You can look on the website pro-osteo.com and you will find all the information about the conference. And I highly recommend it. I'm really looking forward to when I heard
Me
that
too.
You will do a conference. I thought, wow, why only every 2 years? But I think I know why you do it only every 2 years, because it's a lot of work to organize a conference like this.
And it is not only organization, it is also a financial risk. Because
sure.
when you look at that, people come from all over the world. We have people from Brazilia, we have from Canada, we have from the USA. And so for us, it's always, we are always pleased when we have enough persons, people subscribing.
Yeah. Let's cross our fingers that nothing crazy in the world happens.
It looks good. We have already a nice bunch of people. So
Okay. So again, thank you, Renee. Looking forward to see you in
thank
person
you,
at the conference. Happy to have you on the podcast for the second time.
Okay. Thank you for the invitation. Okay. Bye-bye,
bye-bye.
Klaus.
Seit über 3 Jahren ist die Praxissoftware Lemniscus Sponsor unseres Knochenjob-Podcasts. Lemniscus bietet Möglichkeiten für die Praxisorganisation. Die wichtigste Hauptfunktion ist der Kalender, mit dem ihr eure Patienten organisieren könnt. Ihr könnt jeden Fall einzeln dokumentieren, abrechnen und sofort per E-Mail Rechnungen verschicken. Außerdem habt ihr die Möglichkeiten, automatische Terminerinnerungen einzustellen, so dass eure Patienten keinen Termin bei euch mehr vergessen. Super einfach ist die Abrechnung, egal ob ihr mit EC-Karte zahlt, Barrechnungen entgegennimmt oder auf Überweisungen Rechnungen erstellt. Im Kalender ist alles einfach zu organisieren. Die Patientendokumentation, Abrechnung. Mit nur wenigen Klicks habt ihr eine papierlose Rechnung per E-Mail verschickt. Falls ihr euch Sorgen machen solltet über Datenschutz, da hat Lemniscus vorgesorgt, alles datenschutzkonform und einfach zu handeln. Auch beim Thema Finanzbuchhaltung bietet Lemniscus das ganz große Kino. Dadurch habt ihr einen guten Überblick über eure Finanzen und seid auch jederzeit in der Lage, dem Finanzamt eure Kontoführung vorzuweisen. Lemniscus eignet sich für Solo-Selbstständige mit wenigen Terminen in der Woche, aber auch für große bis mittlerweile sehr große Praxen mit mehreren Mitarbeitern. Lemniscus wird euch einiges an Geld und an Zeit einsparen durch die einfache Praxisorganisation. Lemniscus bietet Hörerinnen und Hörern des Knochenjob-Podcasts die Möglichkeit, im ersten Jahr 20% der Gebühren zu sparen. Bei der Anmeldung den Gutscheincode KNOCHENJOB eingeben, dann bekommt ihr 20% im ersten Jahr bei Lemniscus.